You may be seated. Our last case this morning is 2019-324, the State of Ohio/Village of Put-in Bay versus Mark Mathies and State of Ohio Village of Put-in Bay versus Islander Inn. Justice French, who has recused on this matter, we have Judge Piper, who is Judge Robin Piper from the 12th District Court of Appeals, who is sitting in her stead. Welcome, Judge.
Good morning. Thank you.
So, start.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, my name is Andy Miley. I represent the appellants in this matter. We reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. Your Honors, motor vehicles are meant to go from jurisdiction to jurisdiction quickly. This is why modern society is dependent upon motor vehicles. Therefore, as a practical matter, there must be just one licensing authority per vehicle. And as a legal matter, this occurs when the vehicle owner pays the state of Ohio, the licensing authority for motor vehicles, monies, which included in this sum of monies is the local piggyback taxes mentioned in our briefing. And in exchange for payment of these monies, in return, the state gives the vehicle owner a literal physical license to be affixed to the vehicle.
Well, if the state thought that, why would they not have included the licensing statutes in 1715.013? I mean, the state pretty clearly listed which statutes that you couldn't have other taxes on.
Two reasons, Your Honor. That goes right to the heart of this case. It would be superfluous. There's no need for the state legislature to restrict a municipality's ability to license because the people of Ohio have restricted that ability in Article 12, Section 5A, and this court has also restricted that ability in the Firestone versus Cambridge case 95 years ago, where in the syllabus law of this court, that once the state issues a license for a motor vehicle for the privilege to be operated on roadways, then, quote, no municipality in the state has power to levy such excise tax in addition to that levied by the state for similar purposes. So based upon this syllabus law, which predates the statute that the village is relying upon this case, there would be no need to include that language. Also,
except that case was overturned.
It was not overturned. There is a related doctrine of implied preemption that was vacated in the Cincinnati Bell case in 1998 by this court. And in that case, which is a utility tax case, Your Honor, the doctrine of implied specific cases were called out by name. The Firestone case was not called out by name, which leads to the conclusion that in the rare context of motor vehicles, which the state has police power to license under its police power under the Ohio Constitution, is that doctrine is not preempted. There can be no other way.
Well, how it would, if it's the only preemption that would apply is implied preemption, right? So if there's no more implied preemption, how do you get there?
The Firestone syllabus, which has not been overruled, maybe you would do that in this case. We would ask you not to do that because what you would be doing would be green lighting every municipality
So we should have implied preemption for everything else except this area?
The reason
is that kind of your theory?
Because in the other cases, there's no state license. There's no state license.
Okay, but it's not a direct conflict, so it's implied preemption, right?
It is a direct conflict because in the Auster v. Toledo case and other cases we cite in our briefs, that and actually in the Firestone case itself, a municipality does not have power to prohibit what a state license permits. And that's exactly what this ordinance seeks to do, that I have a state license. This is a symbol that I can use my vehicle to go anywhere in Ohio, anywhere on Put-in Bay, anywhere in Ottawa County, anywhere in Ohio, anywhere in the United States, and by international treaty, anywhere in Canada, Mexico, and throughout North America. The village of Put-in Bay is attempting to say, well, for our roads, you need this special sticker license, and you need to pay us money. Well, if the village can say that... Well,
Council, but it only applies to businesses, not individuals, correct?
Yes, but that's a distinction that has no legal significance, Your Honor.
How do you know what my question is?
No, that distinction, I don't, that distinction I'm saying makes no difference.
All right, so you're making generalities that if you register your vehicle, and I would agree with you, your license fee, place that you put on your car, the little sticker you put on your car, that's good all over the state, including Put-in Bay.
Yes.
But I'm not in business. And I have the ability to travel, and so too does the business owner. But this is an additional revenue-generating enactment that Put-in Bay puts on business owners.
Well.
And are you saying there's no legitimate reason for them to put this fee on their vehicles?
I think I have a multi-part answer to that. It doesn't. Mark Matisse is being prosecuted individually. So anybody who borrows my car for a fee and goes and Put-in Bay, if there's no sticker, I'm guilty of that.
Borrows your car for a fee?
If I loan, yeah. I'm going to go to Put-in Bay. I don't have a car. Can I drive from Cleveland, go on the Miller Ferry? I'll give you $50.
Well, how's people going to know that? I mean, these are businesses we're talking about.
Correct. But I'm just going by what the plain language of the ordinance says. Whether the enforceability is a separate question apart from what we're here on, what
the
proposition of law.
Doesn't the ordinance say that it's businesses that are in Put-in Bay? In other words, it actually says for hire and use within the Put-in Bay community.
So it would be any.
So it wouldn't apply to your car from Cleveland.
Yes, it would be, because that would be being used within the village. So it would extend to, but.
So you had your car in Put-in Bay for hire at the time?
If someone paid me money to use it, yes.
Well,
under their own theory, I would be subject to this ordinance. But the Firestone syllabus makes no distinction with regard to businesses. And Article 12, Section 5A similarly makes no distinction. It says no monies derived from fees shall be expended except for certain statutory purposes. So for this, what that section does is it ensures exactly what I'm saying. That it's a one license, one vehicle state. It's a statute that has to enact the fee, because there has to be a statutory purpose for its expenditure.
All right, what happens if my car's licensed in the state of Ohio, I've got my tags, stickers, et cetera, and I want to park at a university because I go there or I work there, or any other, where I have to pay a fee in order to place my car in a geographic location?
Right. So that would be different, because that would not be, that's for the convenience of having to park your car, actually to not use your car. So that would not trigger Article 12, Section 5A.
Wait a minute, it's a convenience for not having to use my car?
You're parking your car and getting out of your car and leaving it there. That is not something that is required of the general public to operate on the public roadways.
Well,
neither
is this business requirement. This is for just people who make a living out of leasing cars or taking a fee for the use of their property.
There's millions of vehicles in Ohio that would be if this is extrapolated, I think there's a danger here that we think, oh, Put-in Bay is on an island.
Well, let's just stick with the facts.
Sure, exactly. Here. So the facts of the matter are there are many untold number of vehicles in Ohio that are used for business purposes. So if this court affirms, that means every municipality in the state can require each of those vehicles to pay all manner of vehicle taxes, and the resultant proceeds could be used for any purpose whatsoever, which directly contradicts Article 12, Section 5A, which is why we're asking you to overrule the Garrett versus Cincinnati case, because we believe in dicta. This court opined years ago that Article 12, Section 5A does not apply to municipalities, but that's not true. It says no monies derived from fees, excises, or license taxes relating to the...
Okay, so even if we bought that, how can you Article 12, Section 5 deals with how money is spent.
Correct.
That's not your challenge here, right?
Right. But this exact issue came up before this court in 2012 in the Beaver Excavating versus Testa case, where the state was sued, the tax commissioner was sued by a bunch of trade associations who were complaining about how a certain monies that were subject to the statute were being expended. And this court, this tax commissioner tried to defend on the basis of the distinction you just made, exaction versus collection. But what this...
We don't even have anything in the record about how the money is being spent here.
It's not being spent for a statutory purpose because it's an ordinance. So that is in the record because there is no statute that applies. This court said in the Beaver case that if there is no lawful expenditure, the exaction is also unlawful because it's the first step in an unconstitutional plan. That's right in paragraph 13 of the Beaver excavating case versus Testa, Your Honor. And then in paragraph 36 of the Beaver case, this court went on to say, Section 5A does not provide any express limitation of its own applicability. And that's exactly what we're asking you to hold here, that this Section 12.5A applies to all monies derived from fees, excises, or license taxes relating to the registration, use, or operation of vehicles. This must be paid by my clients for them to operate their vehicles on the roadways. Therefore, there must be some statute that expends the monies, but there's not. That's why the piggyback tax statute exists. It's an enabling statute because the legislature has recognized, absent the enabling language, there can be no exaction of a tax. So that's Put-in Bay's theory basically renders the entire piggyback scheme, the entire licensing scheme in Ohio, superfluous. If municipalities have the power that Put-in Bay claims here, there would be no need for the piggyback scheme. The piggyback scheme proves our point. This is a one license, one vehicle state. On the business distinction, again, Article 12, Section 5A recognizes no such distinction. Neither does the Firestone case. And so,
how do you fit into your analysis 715.66, which says municipalities can issue a license to owners of vehicles for hire?
Well, that is when they're trying to license the owner themselves, I believe, to make sure that they are properly insured, et cetera, safe. This has nothing to do with that. This is a license for the vehicle, not for the owner. So they're trying to put strings on where the vehicle can go.
I think when I read the ordinance, it says it's a license for the owners of vehicles for hire.
To affix to the vehicle. So this will apply whether the owner's not even, my clients don't even ride in these vehicles. They're rental vehicles. So if this were true.
But they own the vehicles, right?
Yeah, but.
And they're responsible for insuring those vehicles, right?
Probably, yes. Yes.
Okay. But
so is Avis and Budget and Enterprise. So are we going to now say that at Hopkins Airport or at Columbus Airport that Columbus and Cleveland can extract all, you know, monies by saying, you know, we're going to charge you $500 for every rental vehicle or $100 or whatever amount. There's no limiting principle on what Put-in Bay is offering. And if this court affirms, that's the signal to the municipalities that you can leverage society's dependence on motor vehicles to raise revenue. I would reserve the balance of my time.
Ms. Anderson?
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, my name is Susan Anderson, and I am here representing the Village of Put-in Bay, Appalachia, in these cases. This is very simply a home rule case that involves a legitimate constitutional tax. Contrary to appellant's argument, the ordinance that is imposed by the Village of Put-in Bay is not similar or the same to the state's licensing scheme relating to the operation of motor vehicles. What the village's ordinance does do is if a business owner elects to operate a business in the Village of Put-in Bay and bring over 300 golf carts to rent to be used in the Village of Put-in Bay, which is on an island, by the way, then That business owner is imposed a tax on those rental vehicles, and in the plain language of the ordinance, it specifies that the revenues generated by that tax go towards a street repair fund and are to be used solely for the village to maintain and repair the streets that are burdened by these rental vehicles.
Okay, so that doesn't conflict then with 1205A, correct? Because that tells you how you have to use these
fees. It absolutely does not conflict
okay,
with
so 5A. Okay, so that comports, but then that gets you to the problem of does a municipality have the authority to add on a tax here that is, for all intents and purposes, used for the same things that the Constitution authorizes?
I don't believe that what the village is doing is adding on a tax. I think, number one, to answer that question, we have to go back to the fact that in order to restrict a municipality's ability to impose a tax, the state legislature must have invoked an express restriction on the municipality's right to do so.
But before you go on, you said you don't think the village is adding on a tax. What is it that you think they're doing? How would you characterize it?
I think they are two separate taxes. I think that what the state tax does is they license operation of vehicles. I just got my letter in the mail the other day saying my tags are due for renewal.
You must have a birthday coming up.
I do in May. So I will renew that, and I can drive my car over to the village and take it on the ferry and drive all over Put-in Bay without having to pay this tax. But separate from that, if I choose to start a business in the village and I ask for the privilege to do so, if I ask the village to license me as a business to rent vehicles in the village, then that's when I am paying this tax based on the size of the fleet of the vehicle because
so it's a use tax.
I'm sorry?
It's a use tax. In other words, your 300 golf carts are going to put more of a burden on the paths, the roadways, however they travel throughout the island. Is that the connection here?
Yes, and that's why explicit in the ordinance is the fact that the revenue generated by the tax must be used for the street repair fund to account for that extra burden. And I do think that...
So there's a rational relationship that the village has established for this additional fee.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are no toll booths being erected at the village to say that I can't drive my car over. It is just simply related. It's a special tax on businesses that rent vehicles on the village. And I do think it is analogous to the Chief Justice O'Connor's questioning about parking. If I want to park in a municipal parking lot when I have a court case in downtown Cleveland, I have to pay a fee to park there. There's no restriction on my driving my car that is licensed by the state there, but if I want to park there, if I want the privilege of parking I pay a fee.
But isn't parking and driving different?
It is different, but I would submit that driving and renting vehicles are also different, and that's why
They're both operating motor vehicles.
They are both operating motor vehicles, but in this case of the village's ordinance, what the village is doing is not taxing the operation of the vehicles; it's taxing the renting of the vehicles to others because of the wear and tear in the village.
So let's go back to the example of the golf carts. Let's say business orders in 100 golf carts. They'd be responsible for a fee for every one of those,
yes,
correct?
Yes, it's based on the fleet, the size of their fleet.
Size of the fleet. And what if they over-ordered and they only use half of those vehicles? Do they get a rebate on the other half?
They do not. That is within the business owner's discretion to determine the size of the fleet of vehicles that they may need to operate their business.
But sole purpose of having them for the purpose of being rented, mm-hmm. the tax is required on each of those vehicles.
Yes, if you're operating a rental business.
If you're operating a rental business, mm-hmm. regardless of whether the vehicle is being operated.
Right.
If you make them available for it.
Right, exactly, if they are available.
Well, if you kind of think this through, the fee you pay at a parking meter for use of a city street is a certain fee that is in addition to your tax. I mean, if you want to maybe, I'm looking at what the appellant here is saying, I should be able to park anywhere on the street for free because I've paid for my license plates.
Exactly, and obviously that's not, that is
oh, no, we all know that if you do that without paying,
you'll pay.
You know, you'll get an additional fee.
Right, right.
So,
and I do
so counsel, if plaintiffs would rent out the golf carts at Point Clinton or wherever you catch the ferry, the village couldn't charge them.
No, because that is not a village business. You know,
well, it's for hire, and it's for use of the streets of Put-in Bay.
Right, but the statute reaches businesses that are licensed to
the
do
ordinance.
Village. Or the ordinance. The ordinance reaches businesses that are licensed to operate in the village of Put-in Bay. So there is a separate licensing statute that businesses have to make application on a yearly basis to operate a business in the village of Put-in Bay, and this ordinance reaches those businesses.
In this ordinance, the fees derived, they'd go for the repair and maintenance of public roads, correct?
They do. It's revenue generating.
Do they go to any of state roads or just to local, Put-in Bay or county roads?
I'm not sure if that is in the record or not, but there is a state highway in the village. So, but I don't believe the village would be responsible for maintaining that.
Under Article 12, Section 5A, we'd have to read out the word statutory mm-hmm. highways, other statutory highways, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
right.
Your argument negates part of the state constitution.
I don't believe so because this court in the Garrett case specifically found that 5A does not apply to municipal taxes. It just doesn't. So 5A, in my belief, is irrelevant to what this ordinance is doing because the Garrett case very clearly held that the Section 5A is only a limitation on state-imposed fees and the use of those state-imposed fees. It is not, and specifically found that it does not apply to a municipal ordinance.
Counsel, as far as whether statutory highway is a problem here, counties and municipalities can agree with the state to maintain state highways.
I would believe
correct?
That would be the case, yes. Yeah.
So do you know, or is it in the record, whether the state of Ohio comes out and takes care of this, or is it an agreement between this Put-in Bay and the state for the maintenance of this statutory highway?
I don't believe that is in the record, and I frankly do not know the answer
okay.
to that.
All right.
But I do want to, point the court's attention again to the Firestone case and the allegation that the Firestone case governs here, because it just simply does not. I do believe that is a correct assertion of law that the Firestone case was overruled. Even if it was not expressly overruled, certainly the doctrine that it applies, which is implied preemption, was clearly overruled by this case in Cincinnati Bell. And then it was subsequently confirmed by this court that implied preemption was overruled in the case of the New York Frozen Foods case, where in that case, in the New York Frozen Foods case, this court explicitly stated that the preclusive power of state law is confined to those limitations that are expressly stated in the state legislation. There is no implied preemption of local tax law. And in fact, the statute that was referenced during appellant's argument, RC 715.013, that is a statute that the state legislature specifically enacted after Cincinnati Bell. And after Cincinnati Bell said there can be no implied preemption of municipal taxing authority. After that, the state legislature said, okay, well then let's enact a statute and let's tell municipalities where they cannot tax. And there is a laundry list of statutes that are enumerated in 715.013 that specifically says to municipalities, you can't tax in this area. And none of the statutes that are either identified in that statute reach any of the topics that this ordinance reaches, and none of the statutes cited by appellants as being, you know, in conflict or preemptive of this ordinance are listed in there. So I think that it is very clear, based on this court's jurisprudence and that statute, that there has in fact not been any express preemption of this, of the municipality's ability to impose this ordinance. And I think, based on that clear jurisprudence from this court, we are asking this court to uphold the decision based on the fact that it must be an express restriction and not an implied preemption. Now, we did speak a bit about the Section 5A. The lower court in this case did refer to the Garrett case, and very expressly held that this court's Garrett case, that 5A does not apply to municipal ordinances and taxes, and that it applies only to state-imposed fees and the use of those state-imposed fees. Now, this appellants would have you overrule that case, but you know, the burden of proof here for the appellant to show that this ordinance is unconstitutional is beyond a reasonable doubt, and there is, you know, just a lack of support before this court in the record to show that this court should overrule either the Garrett case, or should overrule the cases of Cincinnati Bell and New York Frozen Foods that does rule that you must have express preemption of a local tax law. I would also like to point out to the court another case that the court's held that I think is directly relevant to this case, and this is the Gessler case that I did cite in my briefing. In Gessler, there was some question as to what the test was to apply to the constitutionality of municipal taxes, and in Gessler, this court specifically held that a municipality's implementation of tax laws is a power of local self-government. And as a power of local self-government, the question is whether or not it has been expressly preempted by the state legislature, and that is the test to determine whether it is constitutional. And in that case, the Geisler case also held that a lawful exercise of local self-government may be the exercise of the municipality's taxing authority or an act that relates solely to the government and administration of the internal affairs of the municipality. So again, you know, the tax that is at issue here is solely a tax on village businesses that choose to rent vehicles for hire within the village. And by the plain language of the ordinance, it is to generate revenue to account for the wear and tear on the village's roadways because of the influx of the additional rental vehicles that are being brought in by these businesses. As such, it is a lawful taxing authority of the village because the state legislature has not acted to expressly preempt that taxing authority.
Would it still be lawful, in your view, if the monies went to the put-in-bays general fund?
I do believe it would still be lawful because it's still revenue generating, so it's still a tax, and the fact remains that there is still no Ohio Revised Code statute that expressly preempts the village's ability to make this tax.
So the fact that the ordinance says the money goes to public roads is kind of irrelevant in your view.
I don't think it's irrelevant because I think it does show the purpose of the revenue generating aspect of it. And I do think it does show, the reasoning behind the ordinance itself and that the village, you know, is trying to account for the burden on the roads. But I do think at the core of this, the core analysis is whether or not the state legislature has expressly preempted the municipality's ability to put on this ordinance, and that there is absolutely no evidence in the record of any revised code statute that actually does that. With that, thank you.
Council, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. The Every municipality in Ohio could make these exact same arguments, that rental vehicles deteriorate our roads, and therefore we want to tax every, and therefore every business vehicle. That would be a negative precedent throughout this state.
Isn't that what revised code 715.66 provides for?
No, that's for the city isn't even relying upon that statute, I don't think.
Well, I know they're not relying upon it. I'm responding to your argument. It says any municipal corporation may license the owner of vehicles used for transportation for purposes of hire.
That's the, again, if you look at some case law off of that, that's the owner, for example, a funeral home that owns a hearse. They're making sure that they're responsible. That has nothing to do. That's not what this ordinance does.
But isn't there a fee for that?
Not per vehicle. And that's where this fiction that it goes with the number of cars in the fleet isn't true. Because each vehicle needs a license, but if it's the ordinance says it's not transferable. So if I have 50 golf carts and one is stolen, or I sell one, or one breaks down and I buy a new one, now I pay 51 fees, even though my fleet is the exact same size. The piggyback tax that the state enables already takes into account roadway harm. That's what that statute is there for.
But so, do the municipalities have any financial obligation or responsibility with regard to the roads, or is it all 100% provided by the state?
Sure, municipalities want to maintain their roads, but they get that money from general revenue, other taxes, and so forth. There cannot be a vehicle tax because the rationale, if the rationale is our roads are harmed, then that same rationale could be extended to any vehicle, any rental vehicle that comes onto Put-in Bay or any other municipality. We keep hearing that, oh, the ordinance applies to vehicles housed in Put-in Bay. That's not true. It's vehicles that use Put-in Bay's roadways. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. The difference here is that there's a license. The Association of Detectives versus North Olmsted case, the Oster v. Toledo case. Whenever there's a state license, a municipality cannot attach strings to it because a municipality has no home rule power, taxation or otherwise, to prevent what a state license permits. If the law were different, there would be complete chaos because a license holder would be subject to...
If we were to accept the way that you want to apply Firestone, wouldn't we have to overrule several Ohio Supreme Court cases, Cincinnati Vale versus Cincinnati, Concealed Carry versus Clyde, Panther II Corporation? These are all more recent cases than Firestone. Wouldn't we have to overrule all those cases?
No, because Cincinnati Bell is not a licensing case. You just need to realize
cases stand for the proposition that the preemption has to be statutorily expressed. And your argument on Firestone is it can be implied.
It's expressed in Article 12, Section 5A. There's no need for the General Assembly to express it. The people of Ohio in 1946 by constitutional referendum took care to make sure that only the state can exact a tax because only the state can expend the tax. And I would like to end on Chief Justice O'Connor's question about, well, this does go for roadway purpose, so that is like a section, Article 12, Section 5A purpose. It is like a purpose, but the actual constitutional provision should be applied as written, and it does not say no statutory highway purposes or like or analogous or similar municipal purposes. So we would have to add words to the Constitution that are omitted from Section 5A.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.